What's good, everybody? Pete Jensen, Rob Reese here with you on this Monday morning, November 2nd. Robbie, we're into the month of November, so that means T-minus 2 months until the tentative start of the season. We're excited about it.
Yeah, definitely excited, Pete. We did some more lists last week. We were looking at deep sleepers. We were looking at rookies. We're looking at keeper ranks, all of which are available now on NHL.com/fantasy. Get all your information there. But let's keep it to rookies and keepers today, Pete. Right off the start, I feel like we should talk about Byfield and Lafreniere, maybe Lafreniere with the Rangers. You know, let's say that this is an 82-game season. What do you see him accomplishing his first year as a New York Ranger?
Hey, before Pete jumps in with the answer, real quick, just want to let the listeners know we are doing all of these episodes prefacing that we are shooting and hoping for a January 1st start to the season. Everyone is aware that's what we're aiming for. That's what we're all hoping for. I know if you're listening to this show, you're hoping for the season to start January 1st. So just keep that in mind. We're putting these episodes in the tank, in the deck, so you can go back and listen to them from now until whenever the season starts. But we're planning for a January 1st start date. Go ahead, Pete. Sorry, I just wanted to let the listeners know.
For sure. And yeah, as we get closer, we'll know more about, you know, back to backs and condensed schedule and the exact number of games played and what's the divisional alignment going to be, you know, if and when things change. So we'll be tweaking things on the go. But yeah, certainly the big story for me for the Rangers going into next season is the fact that they have maybe the top two rookies on paper, right? Between Lafreniere and Igor Shesterkin. So like, which one is more valuable to me? The goalie, like, I'm excited about taking Shesterkin among the top 10 goalies and seeing him live up to that potential. As for Lafreniere, to answer your question, I think there's a really good shot. Like, when you look historically the past 5 years, I know we're coming off a bit of a whimper, right? With Kako and Hughes last year. You look at some of the productive rookies over the past five seasons, there is a real shot that this guy could score 60 plus points, 25 plus goals, that sort of thing, 15 to 20 power play points, playing within this dynamic, potent Rangers offense. You agree, Robbie?
Absolutely. I mean, I feel like there's very few scenarios, Pete, in which I see him not being fantasy relevant. Again, I probably would have said the same thing about Kako last year and Hughes, but again, just to kind of beat a dead horse here, I think you have to throw that out the window. Now New York is one step ahead of where they were last year. All those guys have a little bit more chemistry than they did last year. Coach Quinn probably knows how to utilize some younger guys a little bit better than the start of last year. So those signs, Pete, would point to me thinking that Lafreniere is certainly fantasy relevant, certainly a Calder finalist this year. But will he be edged by Igor Shesterkin? I'd like to hear from Bobby and Pete on this as well. Like, I feel like Shesterkin just has such a good chance, Pete, at winning the Calder and maybe being the top fantasy rookie just because he's at the goaltender position. And on the New York Rangers, such a sound team offensively, they're getting better defensively. You have to think that he's due for at least 30 wins minimum if it's an 82-game season, right?
Yeah, I mean, he went 10-2 with a .932 save percentage, you know, got a little derailed in the playoffs when he was unfit to play, but he showed enormous upside. You know, the Rangers will give him the goal support, him and Georgiev, and they are able to mix and match him and Georgiev. So Georgiev is also going to be very valuable, and we should note in keeper leagues, he's only 24 years old, so this is a really strong tandem for the many years to come after they bought out Henrik Lundqvist and he signed with the Capitals. This is like the new era of Rangers goaltending that we're going to see for many years to come. So, and then for, yeah, Lafreniere, I mean, he just turned 19. We have him projected on NHL.com. Robbie wrote the story on draft night. We got him for 65 points, which is a lot, but this is a guy that you're going to be able to get in the 75 to 110 type range in standard drafts. Obviously, you're going to have to reach for him a lot higher in a keeper league, but definitely worth your while, man. The Rangers are loaded on the power play. And then at even strength, I mean, he's got great options. He's either going to play with Zibanejad or he's going to play on the second line, I would say with confidence. Kako, it was tough because he hit the floor last year. Like, he hit the absolute floor. He only had like 20-something points. It was minus 20-something. Quinn did not really give him the opportunity to thrive in that offense. He was outside the top six. So that's what you worry about with the Rangers a little bit with the young players. But I think that Lafreniere will get a better result here by far.
I said this last episode, there is some caution surrounding Lafreniere. As a keeper, if you're talking about keeper leagues, I really wouldn't hesitate, actually. If we're talking keeper leagues, like, I think Lafreniere is going to be a good player for years to come. I think he'll be better also than Kako and Jack Hughes was last year, just based off of his maturity, you know, his body size, what I'm hearing from all the scouts. But I think the interesting, and you guys can let me know, I think the interesting conversation is, like, if you're talking keeper league, who would you take first? Would you take, who would you want for the next 5 to 10 years or so? Would you take Shesterkin or would you take Lafreniere? That's a tough one to answer. I'm not so sure what my answer would be to that.
Well, I think too, I mean, I guess I always have to say this with keeper leagues. It depends on if this is the first year that you're doing the keeper league, or if you've been in this one a little bit and you are deciding to keep players, maybe that you picked up last year. But in either event, I think, Bob, you're looking at a keeper league. I like to focus on the younger, the better. If there's two players I'm choosing between, and there's a guy that's 19 years old, his you know, the sky's the limit, I'm usually going to go with the 19-year-old. This is one unique case where I think if you made the argument for Shesterkin, I would put up no fight and no rebuttal to that. I think it's really just a preference of, hey, maybe my keeper team is a little bit heavy at the goaltender position. Maybe I've got, you know, the Vassie situation back there already. Maybe I've got the Carter Hart situation back there. In that event, obviously, you know, you're looking to get Lafreniere in maybe the first or second round of a keeper league this season. Otherwise, I think Shesterkin's a no-brainer too. You really can't go wrong. But just to kind of put a little bit more scope on Lafreniere, I mean, this is a player that I think you have to think he just has that extra dimension with his physicality to make an impact in his first season as a rookie. And I think that might have been why, you know, Coach Quinn was a little hesitant to put Kako in bigger game situations on the top line or the second line, was because Kako was a little bit one-dimensional, where he was a scorer, he could finish, but you need to play a couple different ways. You need to be a little bit more of a jack of all trades to be an impact player in your rookie season. Jack Hughes had the same thing, where he wasn't a physical guy, so you couldn't really make that case for him to get more ice time in New Jersey either. So I think Lafreniere is really a slam dunk player. I would have him late first round of a keeper league. Obviously, you're prioritizing McDavid, Matthews, all those guys if you're starting from scratch. Maybe even a Svechnikov at this point, and a Pedersen too, because they are the more the proven already. But Lafreniere, I mean, you cannot let this guy fall beyond round two of a keeper league. No freaking way.
Yeah, and just generally speaking to other guys that I think deserve to be in that top 10 overall keeper rankings, even if you're including some of the bigger names like McDavid and Matthews and, you know, some of the younger guys, even Drysdale's only, I think, 25. So he's young enough in many formats. But you have to also consider, for sure, Quinn Hughes and Cale Makar in that realm, considering they have a chance in their second season to even build on what they did last year, maybe score something like 65, 70 points. I mean, their ceilings are endless right now. And then another guy that for this year's rookie class that we're talking about, like, I think Ilya Sorokin is attainable a little bit later than Shesterkin and some of these other guys like Carter Hart that you mentioned, but has a similar ceiling in the years to come. So that's where you always look for value. You know, how high do you reach for a goalie like Sorokin? Top 10 in a keeper league, I would probably do that. I would probably sign up for that for the next couple of years under Barry Trotz.
Hey guys, we were talking about this before we started recording, how Pete is a fan of the Jets. He's a fan of the Bills. He's suffered some serious heartache as a sports fan. I'm just going to say this. If Ilya Sorokin turns out to be a bust or not as good as Pete is expecting, I mean, you will go down as one of the all-time cursed sports fans I've ever known, Pete, because you are so high on Sorokin. He hasn't played a game yet. Listen, we'll see what happens. I think he'll be okay. I think he'll be fine. But if he's a bust, wow, Robbie, that would be something if Sorokin ends up being a bust or just not even a productive starting goalie in the NHL.
I'm going to go Pete's. I mean, that would be heartbreaking. I'm not going to, it'd be hard for, I think all of us being New York guys now, it'd be hard to witness that. But for Pete, I'm going to defend him here. I think Sorokin has the potential to be the best out of the bunch, to be the best goalie in the Metro, and Barry Trotz and co paving the way. Mitch Korn with a little bit, you know, that edge that he's got, that always goalies always seem to thrive under him. I just think Sorokin's a slam dunk. I know that Lou, I know Lou likes to hold people back a little bit and make sure they're real ready, they're mature too. But I think Sorokin, he's been playing against, you know, the biggest guys in Russia the past however many years. He's got the best save percentage over there. And these are talented players. A lot of these guys can score goals in the KHL. And the fact that he's done this every single season in the KHL has been impressive. I think he's going to transition right away. Will he get the shot right out of the gate? That's probably not going to happen. That's probably going to be Varlamov. But we saw it last year where Varlamov inched his way to full-time starter for the Islanders, which hadn't been a thing for the past two seasons, right? So I think Sorokin's got a real shot to at least split 50% starts with Varlamov. And if he's the real deal, he could end up capturing that spot full-time. That's my belief. I know it's bullish, but I really believe in Sorokin.
Well, just to touch on the history of the Islanders and disappointments, like the bar is pretty low, right, with Rick DiPietro from, you know, 10, 15 years ago. So I think it's going to be a lot better, obviously. And I think that, you know, Sorokin has a chance here to be the full-time starter as early as the end of this coming season. He's probably going to start as the backup, and Varley had a great postseason, so he deserves it. But when you think about like writing on the wall type thing, right, they brought in Varlamov so that in the hope they could get Sorokin to come over from Russia, which was a good accomplishment because they were trying to do that for many years and they weren't able to. So between Lou and Trotz and the team performing well in the playoffs each of the past 2 years, winning multiple rounds, and then get Varley playing well, bouncing back. The thing about Varley, though, in like a standard league that I worry about, right, Robbie, you've watched this guy his whole career, year to year inconsistency. He can never put together consecutive seasons where he's fantasy relevant. So that's really the worry about that. And that's why I see Sorokin maybe getting this opportunity similar to last year with Shesterkin, right? Mid-season, early January, he got, you know, popped into the lineup and never looked back.
Robbie does bring up a good point with Lou. He does like to hold those young players back, but I'll say this with Lou, he's not getting any younger. He's not getting any younger. He wants that cup. He wants to win it so bad. I'm surprised he hasn't made a big, big splash in free agency. I thought he would because he's getting older and he wants that cup. But I think we're seeing Lou can't wait around forever. He's got to get the ball rolling here. And with Trotz as the coach and Korn as the goalie coach, I don't think he'll hesitate. If Sorokin is the better goalie, he's going to play, Rob. I agree. Yeah, I agree, though, with Lou. There's a bit of a concern there.
And I think Pete made a great point about Varlamov, too, being a little bit shaky. Even on a game, a week-to-week basis, Pete, I mean, we saw Varlamov start great last year and then look great again, but it was in flashes, right, throughout the regular season. There was a stretch where you couldn't really start this guy, and then Greiss was faltering a little bit. The Islanders had totally fallen off a cliff, and in like a 17-game span, they were like the worst team in the NHL or real close to it. So, yeah, that's the risk you run, and that's why I think the door is wide open for a guy like Sorokin. The only thing I will say is I'm a little bit not – concern, but just I'm wondering kind of what the Islanders' vision on their blue line is after getting rid of Devon Taves. I wasn't really sure, you know, what that did for them other than maybe they had, you know, an internal cap crunch. Maybe they were worried about some of the other RFAs that needed to be signed either this year or the year after. So I'm not really sure what that move was about necessarily. But it does bring me to another interesting thought regarding Devon Taves is the Colorado Avalanche blue line now, Pete, with Cale Makar. I mean, there's no question in my mind. You cannot say who's going to be better, Makar or Hughes. They both have unlimited potential. They're both going to be amazing players in the league. They're both going to be Norris finalists in a matter of a year or two, right? I think Quinn Hughes is going to be a Norris finalist probably in 3 years from now. I wrote that in a roundtable this week. But now that Devon Taves is on the Avalanche blue line, Eric Johnson's there. They've got Sam Girard's there. They've got a lot of guys, Pete, that can put up points, you know, outside of Cale Makar. Does that maybe make you think, okay, Quinn Hughes is maybe a little bit more of a safe bet point-wise just because he's going to play more minutes and they're going to depend on him for points? Or do you think it doesn't matter because Makar is super talented?
I think you make a good point about like Makar and the Avalanche just being loaded on defense. And like that's sometimes that strong supporting cast like works against your ceiling a little bit. Quinn Hughes in the playoffs was just sensational. And you know, I think there's a big question this year, like who is he going to play with at even strength? Is there going to be any drop off after Tanev went to Calgary? You know, he was a nice veteran on his side. I know Vancouver's really loaded on the left side. They don't really have many guys on the right side other than I think Tyler Myers. So will Nate Schmidt end up playing with Quinn Hughes? That could be a really nice combination if it works out, but Schmidt would be playing on his offside. So that's just a storyline of concern for Quinn Hughes. I have zero concern about Cale Makar and the Avalanche. I think they're going to romp this upcoming regular season and probably win the Western Conference. So obviously they're one of the favorites to win the Stanley Cup. So I would say that Makar is maybe a little bit safer just because of team security, but maybe the bigger ceiling, like you said, has to be Quinn Hughes, because Pedersen has, I think, 100-point ceiling. Quinn Hughes probably has an 80-point ceiling this year. Mm-hmm. I mean, the expectations and the potential reality are in line with that team. I don't see them taking a step back, Vancouver.
Do you believe that Quinn Hughes was the most impressive player, young player, in the playoffs this past postseason? I mean, Miro Heiskanen is up there, Shea Theodore is up there, but Quinn Hughes is, to me, I mean, the things he was doing was like, I mean, this is Brian Leetch stuff that he's doing on the ice. He's it's incredible. So I don't know, if I got Quinn Hughes' opportunity to take him in the Keeper League, I'm scooping him up. I know you can't get all these players, but Quinn Hughes he's impressive. He's an impressive player.
He was by far the most impressive young player in the playoffs by a wide margin. The reason I say that, look at power play points by defensemen in the postseason. Hughes was second to Victor Hedman. He had only 1 point less than Victor Hedman. Hedman played 10 more games than Quinn Hughes. 10 more games. Hedman played on a power play for the Tampa Bay Lightning, which was absolutely loaded with point per game plus guys. Okay. Now, nothing against Vancouver, but the talent gap between Vancouver and Tampa is still monumental. Okay. With or without Steven Stamkos in the lineup, Quinn Hughes is certainly the guy I think that has a little bit of a higher ceiling for points. But I have Cale Makar ranked 3, and I've got Quinn Hughes ranked 4 in keeper ranks, just because of what Pete mentioned. The Avalanche are the safest team fantasy-wise in the National Hockey League. If you've got a top 5 pick in a keeper league, if you've got a top 10 pick and you're looking to get a defenseman, you can't go wrong either way. But if you had to ask me who's your safest pick out of the two, I would just say Makar, because of their foundation is so solidly laid out. Their plan for the next 5 years is crystal clear. Where I know Vancouver might have a couple more concerns, their cap crunch is actually surprisingly tight for Vancouver, and I wouldn't really say they have a complete roster yet. So I would answer Cale Makar is the guy I would give a slight edge to, but don't be surprised to see Quinn Hughes have more points than Cale Makar this season.
I think there's definitely a case for Heiskanen to maybe say this guy gained the most value for long-term leagues from the postseason, because we knew going into the postseason that Makar and Hughes were so strong and they'd be top 10 or even top 5, like Robbie said, keeper league assets. But Heiskanen now is at 18 on Robbie's ranking, so he cracked the top 20. He was a top 4 pick in his draft, but he was still not on power play 1. He was behind Klingberg in the lineup. But now you got to view this guy in a similar light, maybe available around later for a keeper league or for regular leagues a round or two later. But you got to reach for Heiskanen at this point, because the display that he put up, even though he was on the second power play, he had like close to 10 power play points in the playoffs. But yeah, one good nugget I saw on Quinn Hughes, had the most assists and points by a rookie defenseman in NHL history this year. So, you know, we compared him to Leetch. Compared him to some of the all-time greats, he deserves to be, because he set records in both of those categories. Those are major categories. That's not some random category. Assists and points. Amazing.
I'm sorry if I hijacked the show, but we were talking about rookies. Where does Quinton Byfield shuffle in this entire scenario? Where do you see Quinton Byfield as a guy? What round would you draft him at? What's his upside? He's going to play in the NHL next year, right? By all accounts, right? And he's
too big not to.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Rob. Him playing junior again, Bob, would be a disaster for anyone playing against him. He is meant to be an NHL player this year, a second line center, prototypical in the way that he skates and his frame. The thing with Byfield, I have him ranked 21, which is right behind Jack Hughes, actually at 20. The reason why I'm still giving Hughes a slight edge is I just think that we did not see what Hughes and Kako are capable of. It's just, I want to see that before I get too high on someone else. But Byfield, I really believe, especially on a team like LA, which has really laid the ground floor now in terms of prospects. They are so rich with young guys that are ready to make the jump. Now, will it happen this season? Probably not. And I think that's what will hold Byfield back from being in that top three Calder finalist race. Now, would it surprise anyone if he was? No, he's got the pedigree that could be there. But I think that the wing situation in LA right now is not good enough where you can think that Byfield's going to crack 55 points, maybe get up to the 60 bar. That would be my only hesitation with him. But if you're looking at his keeper value in general, you know, right after Heiskanen, right after a guy like Kaprizov and Samsonov go, I would look to pull the trigger on Quinton Byfield.
Yeah, that what you said, you're not over exaggerating the thing about the wings. I mean, they probably have the worst wing depth in the entire NHL. Even if you compared them to, say, Ottawa, one of the other worst teams, they have Brady Tkachuk and Dadonov. Compare them to Detroit, they have Mantha and Bertuzzi and Zadina and a couple other prospects. So, you know, safe to say LA is the worst in the league in that regard. But now having that 1-2 punch for years to come, and maybe 1-2-3 if you count some of their other quality prospects of Kopitar, Byfield, Turcotte, right? They got Anderson Dolan, they got Velarde, a bunch of guys that could play center on that team. And that's how you build a championship contender. That's how you rebuild one if you're the Kings. So you'll be able to acquire some serviceable wings at different points over the next couple of years to make these guys fantasy relevant. You still have Dustin Brown, you still have Alex Iafolo, decent players. So maybe he ends up with one of those two guys. But looking at like body type, I mean, we saw last year Kirby Dach at 6'4", you know, kind of fly under the radar during the regular season and play on the third line, but really starred for the Blackhawks in the postseason. Byfield also 6'4", but about 15, 20 pounds heavier, you know, as such a young kid. So he actually has the similar body type to Kopitar and could really make an immediate impact here. So maybe take him in the last round or two of your draft, just hoping for the best. And, you know, he's going to be a great player for the Kings and a big upgrade in reality. I just don't know that it's going to translate to fantasy just yet. I could see him, like Doc, in year two, we're looking at him as a breakout candidate next year.
Yeah, and if you're comfortable in a keeper league, you know, drafting, setting yourself up for the future, don't be ahead, you know, don't be afraid to select this guy pretty early and just know that your plus minus might be a little bit weak this year and stuff like that. But, you know, and then you're keeping him for the year after and then you're set, right? So I still wouldn't hesitate too much on that. And I think Doc is a great conversation piece because he, to me, in a keeper league would be taken right behind probably a guy like Byfield, maybe right around like a Tim Stutzel, a Charlie McAvoy, stuff like that, because Doc has really, the interesting thing about Doc is he clearly showed that he can be a number one center on the Chicago Blackhawks. And that says a lot because Jonathan Toews is a center there. So Doc really impressed me, Pete. And I think even his play in the postseason too, where he didn't look out of place, right? And that's the best competition. That's probably the best test that you're going to get for a rookie is the postseason. So the fact that he still produced in the postseason, I think he had 6 points in that 9-game stretch. He had some good shots there. He had a couple power play points. I mean, that's everything that you want to see to know that he's going to be a safe selection in keeper drafts for this year, in standard drafts for this year. The only thing that it's unfortunate that we even have to bring it up, but Chicago is just a bit of a mess in terms of their direction. I guess that's the price you pay for winning cup after cup after cup. And, you know, I'm sure the fan base is probably understanding to a degree of that, but they just don't have the elite tools around, you know, Doc, that they might have a couple seasons ago, Pete. So that would be my only hesitation. It's just that I'm not sure Chicago is built to get back to the playoffs, at least in the next 2 or 3 years, barring an incredible, sensational, jaw-dropping performance from Pat Kane in the regular season.
Yeah, it's going to be tough. And that's the shame about it. They still have Kane and Toews and Keith, of course. Crawford is out, so they don't have a starting goaltender or anything close to it, to be honest. And then the defense is weak beyond, you know, Duncan Keith and maybe Adam Boqvist. So, but if you look on paper for this keeper league rankings, they got three guys around that top 50 range of players 23 years old or under. So they actually do have some, you know, a breath of fresh air moving forward for the long term between Kirby Dach, Alex DeBrincat, who still qualifies for this list, and then Adam Boqvist we have at 52 in your ranking. So some nice youth and potential. It's just going to be a matter of taking the championship pedigree, taking the young players, and building something in between, especially on the back end that can even be half decent. I mean, right now they're not half decent on the back end, which is a shame and a concern for everybody's plus minus, including Patrick Kane. If you want to take him in the top 10 of a standard draft, I would worry about that for him.
You know what's funny, Pete, is that Kirby Dach is a breakout candidate to have, you know, 50 plus points playing alongside Patrick Kane, whereas Kako and Hughes, who were drafted ahead of Dach, are really deep sleepers now after having such bad rookie seasons. So the fantasy conversation is ever changing. It's evolving every day. And it's surprising to me that we are, you know, looking at them in such different lights than a year ago, but I think it's good. And yeah, you mentioned DeBrincat and Boqvist, you know, it's a great point because Chicago does have some diamonds in the rough there. And those youthful guys, they can really make an impact, especially, you know, maybe holding Duncan Keith around for a couple more seasons, you know, keeping the older guys young. And maybe it's not going to be a total travesty, but I do think that, you know, plus minus is a major concern for that organization. It's like, I'm almost more intrigued, Pete, by, you know, the Ottawa Senators and like a Tim Stutzel and what, how he's going to do with Jake Sanderson and how he's going to fit in, just because Ottawa has like a young, fun energy now that Chicago just doesn't.
Oh, it's so true. And yeah, there are a bunch of teams that are well represented near the top of this list, the top 50 or so. And I think another one is definitely the Rangers, who we touched on earlier, but one guy I wanted to lump into the conversation is Adam Fox, because he was on our breakout list for this coming season. The deeper we looked into it, right, Robbie, the more we liked. We saw he was on pace. If they were to play 82 games, he was on pace for 49 points, despite not playing on power play one. So that's another team that is well represented among the top half of this list for keeper and dynasty formats. And Adam Fox, I mean, right, this coming year could be destined for power play one, and maybe we'll never look back after that.
Well, he's the gift that keeps on giving after not wanting to play in Calgary and taking his talents to Manhattan. I mean, he looks like a player, Pete, that it wouldn't surprise anyone to be 60-point floor year in and year out at the defense position. The only reason I'd love to have him a top 20 asset in keeper leagues, the only reason that I'm a little, you know, hesitant to go there is just because of Tony DeAngelo. He was so good on the top power play. It's almost like Coach Quinn, you know, it would be ludicrous if he pulled DeAngelo off that top unit. Now, can Fox wheel and deal with Tony DeAngelo? Absolutely. And I hope he does get a shot there, because if he does, this is going to be the clear number one player that gives you exposure to the elite New York Rangers offense in a keeper league. So yeah, Fox, I look at his ceiling super, super high. I think he's right in the Sergachev, the Shabbat, the Bowen Byram, the Charlie McAvoy conversation. And I think that with New York and their elite prowess now, I think that Fox could emerge as the best player out of that bunch.
Yeah, and he was really overshadowed last year by Hughes and Cale Makar. I mean, when has there ever been a rookie defenseman class like there was last year? So, I mean, total afterthought, really, when you look at the top 20, 25 defensemen for most people drafting, like Adam Fox is not included there, but he almost should be just after that conversation, and certainly has a ceiling of being like top 15, top 10 at the position if all goes right and things break into his favor this year. You mentioned Bowen Byram and that whole group of Avalanche young defensemen. They're stacked. They don't really have a spot up for grabs. That's the one thing that could hurt him this year if he does get a chance, right? He may not even be a regular in the lineup. When you look, they have Makar, Gerard, Johnson, Devon Taves, Ryan Graves, and Ian Cole. So where is he going to fit into their top six defensemen? Maybe he won't to start the season unless there's an injury or two.
Well, that's why, you know, I think the Avalanche, it's like they have so many chips now that if they were to make some big trade or really shake things up, I mean, they have so many assets, especially on the blue line now, that they could acquire a really, really dominant forward. So that might be a storyline to watch in the future. It is interesting, though. I mean, whenever I picture Bo and Byron, Pete, I just can't see how he's fitting into that lineup. But with that said, he is a player with tremendous skill, with tremendous upside. And if there is a way for him to weasel his way in the lineup, he's going to do it and he's going to make an impact. You know, it's going to be funny how many points that their defense combined for this year, Pete. I mean, it could be astronomical. One storyline, though, I do think is relevant is that World Juniors are set to be held at the same time as normal in December. And a lot of these guys that we're talking about, a lot of these 19-year-olds that normally would just be playing full-time in the NHL this season, they'll be playing in World Juniors for their respective countries, competing very hard. So if you think about this in a fantasy lens, and I don't think I'm reaching by saying this, but those guys are going to train so hard for that tournament, play so hard for their countries in that time that they're going to be ready to go and come flying out of the gate this year. So if you're worried about drafting rookies this year, don't. These guys are going to be ready to go.
The best part of that is you get a chance to put your scouting binoculars on, right, for these World Juniors before your draft, and you get a chance to see all these young players compete at a very high level here in World Juniors. You get a sense what these players are, how they've developed physically, you know, what they are on the ice. I love that. I wouldn't have the draft before the World Juniors. In fact, if you're in a league, wait until after the World Juniors to get the draft in, so you have a sense what these players are.
Yeah, I believe, right, Kirby Doc's getting loaned to, first country. So that's pretty cool. We could get a refresher course on how so many of these players we're talking about in these Keeper League top 100 rankings will materialize and produce fantasy results for you here and now. They're not just long-term projects. I know we were talking about that for Byfield, but even him, you don't know, how equipped these guys are, especially a big body like that, for a team that is overlooked, right? So many of these teams, like even the New Jersey Devils, like I saw your Deep Sleeper article, right, Robbie? Mm-hmm. It led with Mackenzie Blackwood and Jack Hughes. People are not drafting New Jersey Devils. I mean, when we got to the final round, final pick of our mock draft 1.0, go back and listen to the show. The last pick was Nikita Gusev. That was the only Devils player that went in the whole draft. So
yeah,
totally overlooked are some of these Devils guys, including Gusev, who's still relatively young. And then, of course, Jack Hughes and the potential starting goalie in Blackwood.
Well, the only guy drafting Devils players is Davey Satriano. Okay, yeah. He likes to stockpile them. Even in a keeper league, he'll stockpile all the Devil players just so he has those guys on his squad. Because he watches every single game twice, actually. He could root for them every single night and then again the next morning. So Davey's all over the Devils. I'll say this. Every single time in a fantasy draft in these keeper leagues, I take a player that I think is going to be good. I take a flyer on him. And he turns out being a total bust. I take him too high. The guy this year I know I'm going to take just because I love his background, I love his backstory, is Tim Stützle. I'm going to draft this guy, and he's going to do nothing. He probably won't even play in the NHL this year. He's going to do nothing for the next 3 years. But I'm going to have Stützle on my team, the German. You know, by all accounts, a very talented player, talented scorer. But that's the sort of thing I do every single time I'm in one of these keeper drafts.
Well, that's a good point you actually bring up him because, you know, we're not sure if he's going to play in the league this season or not. If he does, I think he's got a good shot, though, to be a point producer for Ottawa. I mean, they don't have a lot of other guys that are going to be racking up a ton of points. So should you draft this guy in a keeper league in the top 3-4 rounds? Yeah, absolutely. He's worth drafting. I mean, if you can get away, it depends on your league settings, your league format. If you can get away with stashing a guy like this, he's certainly among the highest upside, a top 25 guy overall for 23 and under players, no question about it. But I do think that, you know, this conversation about paying attention to whether guys are going to play in the league or not is paramount. That's something, again, pay attention through December, early January, okay, whenever the season's slated to start. But I do want to start answering some Twitter questions and stay with the underappreciated teams. This one is about the Minnesota Wild, Pete. And the question is essentially, do you think it's wise to go after a duo like Marco Rossi and Kirill Kaprizov, who are both, I mean, highly, highly skilled players, both top 50 assets probably in a keeper league. What do you think about that, Pete? I mean, Minnesota doesn't have a whole lot of appeal. They don't have many centers, but these wings have limitless upside.
Oh yeah, and they have Fiala too. Like I think Fiala maybe just didn't make the cut for your list because he's older than 20. I think he was 23 in the playoffs. He just maybe turned 24, but he has to be viewed in the close to the upper echelon, especially with what Bill Guerin is doing and rebuilding the right way. And we talk about from a negative light so often for short-term fantasy leagues, the center depth in Minnesota, but hey, Marco Rossi could step right in and be their number one center by the end of this coming season if he cracks the lineup, stays healthy. I mean, who does he has to surpass? Nick Bonino and Marcus Johansson and Nick Bjugstad? I mean, he could do that if he's a, you know, if even if he's a player of Kirby Dach's caliber last year, or you know, maybe I know Jack Hughes struggled because of his size and then was shifted to wing, so that's part of the reason. And the Devils were talent-wise, were lacking after they traded Taylor Hall and everything like that. Everything went wrong last year. But back to Rossi and Kaprizov, I think that they have a great potential to play together because that's the question we're asking ourselves all offseason. Who is Fiala and Kaprizov going to play with on the top line if they're together, or maybe secondary scorer? So the fact that Rossi is even in the mix for the top six is really good. And hey, the Minnesota Wild, the past decade, they haven't been developing their young prospects on the fly. I'm excited to finally see it happen. Let's get a young player like Rossi in the top six for a change. It never happens in Minnesota for some reason.
Well, I can't even believe he slipped to 9. I mean, that was such a gift for the Wild. I'm sure they were floored when he was available. And yeah, I mean, he was over 2 points per game in the OHL last season, outscoring guys that were drafted the year before he was. So Rossi's got a lot of upside. The Minnesota picture is a little shaky overall, I think, for the forward position, but they have such a safe defense group that should help any rookie forwards that are slated to crack the lineup this season. And I think they need a guy like Rossi to come in and play right away, Pete. I mean, I don't know if this is a team that's trying to rebuild on the fly while remaining competitive. I think that's why they bring in a guy like Cam Talbot. You know, you could say, well, why would they make that signing when they've got two other guys that can, you know, stop pucks for them and net, younger guys too. But if that's a sign that they're going to try and remain competitive in that division this season, then you might have to have Rossi penciled in the lineup. Maybe he starts on a third line role, a second line role, but don't be surprised when he gets a shot at playing 20 minutes a night on the top line. I mean, there's crazier things that have happened. And if he works his way into, you know, that second cut of Calder finalist conversations, it really wouldn't shock me.
It wouldn't shock me either. And another dimension to the Wild, even though Talbot is maybe a deep sleeper with some sneaky upside for this year, with the great top four defenseman in front of him, you look at Kaapo Kakkonen as their goalie of the future. That could happen as soon as this year. You know, Alex Stalock was really good last year, but who knows if that's going to continue, if that's going to last. So if he cracks the lineup, he's 24 years old. He's another guy like Fiala who just missed the cut because of age for your list. But if you think that they're both 24 between, and then Kaprizov's 23, and then Rossi is so young and just breaking into the league, that's four core players that the Minnesota Wild have for many years to come. So that's the blueprint for them. And if you're in a keeper league with slightly different rules, that's one of the most coveted long-term teams, very quietly, Minnesota, with those four players.
So another coveted long-term team could be, and again, this is with a grain of salt, but the Buffalo Sabres. And a player that people want to know about is Dylan Cousins. Cousins had a phenomenal year in the WHL last year. He exceeded his WHL career high in points with 85 in 51 games. That's an improvement from 84 points in 68 games the season before. He looked great at World Juniors for Canada. And again, Buffalo, the way that their lineup is constructed, they have availability where he could play center either on the second line or on the third line, depending kind of where Eric Staal fits into the whole realm there. But honestly, Dylan Cousins is just a guy that I think, you know, he's being overlooked because there's flashier names ahead of him in these keeper ranks, Pete. But I think Buffalo is a perfect situation where they actually do have some real talent at wings between Olofsson, now with Taylor Hall and a one-year deal there. It wouldn't surprise anyone to see Jeff Skinner, who has been inconsistent before, have a better season than he did last year. So there's real shot for Dylan Cousins to come in here. Now, I don't expect to have a big season for him point-wise in his rookie year, but it could lay, you know, a nice framework for him moving forward in keeper leagues.
Oh yeah. And I love it. I love that they got Eric Staal, because even if Staal starts as the 2C and then is phased out into the 3C role, that will help a player like Dylan Cousins. When Dylan Cousins, like look at Casey Mittelstadt, for example, we were like, oh, he has the opportunity to be the number two center behind Jack Eichel. But the team was a train wreck right after the first line of, at the time, I think was Skinner and Eichel and Reinhardt. Now it was Olofsson with Eichel, and now it's going to be, of course, Taylor Hall this year. But they have a ripple effect. They have better forward depth this year by a mile compared to the recent years. And yeah, I just think Cousins having some veterans around him and less holes around him, it's a good time to bring him in. I'm glad they waited a year for him. That could have really derailed his development if he was in the NHL last year with the Sabres. I mean, that would have been like Mittelstadt 2.0, unfortunately. Thankfully, they were patient, and now they're a team that's ready to break through, I think. Other than goaltending, and if Ullmark is the guy, it could solidify them a little bit. He had good numbers last year. All of a sudden, Buffalo has a pretty deep defense, much deeper forward group, couple elite players. They could be a surprise playoff team if Ullmark is a decent goalie here.
Their defense is great, Pete. I mean, they completely quietly under the table, you know, redid it with Joki Haru back there. They've got Colin Miller back there, Ristolainen, Montour. I mean, these are guys that can all play. And honestly, these are guys that have all been fantasy relevant before. So it wouldn't surprise me to see this team take a big step. And it's unfortunate. Yeah, what happened to Mittelstadt? I mean, he looked like he had such great potential. And then when you come into such a bad situation, I can't imagine how hard that is for a young player. Two more questions that I wanted to get to from the fans here. This one's pretty interesting. Rookies that people want to know about. Nick Robertson from the Toronto Maple Leafs. You know, he looks great. He looks super skilled. A player that can score goals. He's got a lethal wrist shot. Great skater. Clearly one of the elite talents. If you're talking about prospects and potential to score points, the only issue that I see for him, and I see for guys like Connor McMichael, who's in the same cut of cloth, is just that the teams that they're coming into are loaded at forward. I mean, where on earth is this guy going to be fantasy relevant when Andreas Janssen wasn't fantasy relevant, when Kapanen struggled to be fantasy relevant? It's just like these great teams have their top six literally, Bob, in Sharpie, permanent. And where are you putting Nick Robertson in there?
Well, certain leagues you can draft from the AHL and the junior league. So, you know, you can draft him. He's going to produce on the Marlies, the Toronto Marlies. So, you know, pick him up and away you go. But no, I mean, how's he finding ice time on that Toronto Maple Leafs team? Absolutely right. There's no slot for him.
But on the contrary, I would say that there might actually be a slot for him, because he cracked the lineup in the playoffs last year, played four games and scored a goal. His first NHL goal came in the playoffs. He's 19 years old. He led the OHL in goals last year with better than a goal per game, which is hard to do in that league, especially when he was limited to 46 games. And I looked at the max, was 67 games in the OHL last year. So he led the league in goals at that young, and you know, played about 20 games less than the top games played guys in the league. So really amazing talent for Toronto. And you look at, they traded Kapanen to the Penguins. They traded Janssen to the Devils. And they might have a slot on second line left wing. So it might be primarily even strength production here, because he's probably not cracking the power play one anytime soon with all the great options Toronto has on the forward group. But hey, exposure to John Tavares and William Nylander on the second line playing left wing. He has to beat out Ilya Mikheyev, who's been, you know, banged up the past year or so. So I think there's a great chance for him to crack the top six in Toronto and maybe, you know, crack the top five fantasy rookies for this year after those big four that we were talking about. Who maybe has a higher ceiling, than Robertson after Lafreniere, Kaprizov, and the two goalies, Sorokin and Shesterkin? He's probably the next on the list.
I wouldn't say great chance. I would say he's got a fair shot at it. You know, I mean, stranger things have happened, but Mikheyev was such a difference maker. Like he was so good on that second line. Zach Hyman, again, like I've been waiting for him to get yanked off the top line. They won't do it. Like that's the thing that I think that is it's not going to hold Nick Robertson back in his development, because being surrounded by guys like JT and Austin Matthews in the locker room is going to do fantastic things, you know, for his skill. Even in practice against those guys, he's going to develop so much quicker than guys on these teams that don't have a lot of that. I would say though, Pete, I think you bring up a great point. You know, with Mikhaev's injury history, there is a real shot that, you know, whether it's not in the 20, you know, maybe not in the first 20 games or so. So maybe you're not drafting this guy. You know, maybe he's not your last round pick in a standard league, but if he goes undrafted in leagues, all of a sudden Mikhaev has another injury, Pete, and he does get that shot with JT. You're right. He could be an outside Calder guy. And for the Toronto Maple Leafs in that market, I mean, if you succeed in your rookie year, you're on the path to stardom in the NHL. So I think it's a great take. I definitely hope that he gets a shot. I would be a little cautious about, you know, taking him with your second to last pick or last round pick in the draft, but, you know, definitely keep an eye on this player. Certainly keep an eye on the lines in training camp, because if he is slated to start in that top six, holy moly, that would be amazing for his fantasy value.
It would be exciting. And yeah, he led the league in the OHL in goals, and Rossi, who we mentioned earlier from the Wild, led the OHL in points last year with 120. So those are two rookie sleepers if you're looking for this year. I know they're big names, but in the grand scheme of standard leagues, there are not many rookies, like I said, being drafted outside of those first four guys. People have been reluctant so far. Another guy that I really like that we haven't talked about and is from a lower tier team is Trevor Zegras from the Anaheim Ducks. Do you think that he could make an immediate impact here and maybe be a diamond in the rough rookie, even though he was taken in the top 10 in his draft last year? Maybe he could be that fifth highest performing rookie for fantasy if he emerges on a pretty bad team in Anaheim. But, you know, he has a chance, maybe if he plays with Raquel or something like that, a former 30 goal scorer.
I'd love to see it. I worry a little bit about Anaheim's situation for this season specifically. I just don't see it being very pretty out there in California for them. Now, does that mean you're going to wait on this player to come up to the NHL a year? It might. You know, I think that if Anaheim's management is being realistic about the state of the team, I don't think they're projecting a whole lot of wins for the season ticket holders this year. Now, with that said, Zegras has all the skill in the world to make wings like Sonny Milano, Danton Heinen, Troy Terry better players. And those guys still have potential in this league to be somewhat decent point producers, not stars, but, you know, 45, 50 point guys, right? So I think Zegras, you have to give a real shot for him to capture, you know, one of those spots this year in the top nine. But I think Anaheim just has such little fantasy appeal overall that I have a hard time thinking he's going to get more than, you know, 40 points. I think you could say the same thing. I know we got a question about Philip Zadina for the Red Wings, kind of saying, is it time to call him a bust? Absolutely not. It's not time to call him a bust. He can still play, but the Red Wings are in such dire shape right now, even with some offseason moves, that, you know, I think they've got a good plan for the future. But I think if you're looking for fantasy return this season, and I had to go between Zegras and Zadina, I'd actually maybe go with Zadina, thinking that, you know, he could maybe stick on the top line or second line guaranteed, where I see Zegras maybe fitting in third line.
The Ducks are like the Devils. If you have a lot of players on the Devils or Ducks on your fantasy team, you're going to end up at the bottom of your league. It's just fact. I mean, there's a couple players that you'd pick up that can complement, but that's just the fact. I mean, these teams are not very good and they're in rebuilding phases. And you don't want to sit there and start collecting players on these teams. You don't want to be Davey Satriano with five Devils players on your team. You don't want to be someone that has six Ducks players on your team. You just don't want it.
I agree. I don't want that. But maybe as a standalone, just if it's a deep league and you start getting to some of the veteran forwards around the league and you'd rather take a more exciting player from a completely overlooked team. This is not the Ottawa Senators or, you know, a team like that that's up and coming. This is a team that's been going down, down, down. And even their goalie, John Gibson, is pretty much a fantasy afterthought at this point. Even though he might be one of the top 10 goalies in the NHL on his own as an individual, he's not fantasy relevant anymore because the team and the defense, the once proud deep defense, has been completely ravaged the past couple of years. One note on Zadina, 15 points in 28 games last year when he was healthy. So that's pretty decent production, better than a half a point per game. So if he ends up playing in the top six, I know they did add some decent veteran, you know, some experienced forwards like Bobby Ryan and what Namestnikov and stuff like that, and Thomas Greiss. So maybe they're slightly better than last year, and maybe the plus minuses are not a complete disaster like they were last year. Zadina in 28 games was minus 13. So that's tough. So that's the concern with the Detroit Red Wings, but Zadina is a nice player. Definitely would not call him a bust at this point.
No, I'm not. Yeah, I wouldn't do it either. And I think one quick note here on the Anaheim Ducks is Sam Steele actually quietly had 22 points in 65 games for them last year. That's right around the same production that we saw from Jack Hughes and Kako, in a similar time frame, Pete. So maybe, before I'm too hard on the Ducks here, it is possible that Zegras could be an impact player there. Again, I wouldn't, go too high on the player right now, but I think if you're looking at upside, trying to cherry pick from a team that's not trendy, you could do a whole lot worse. But if I were to, stack guys up and kind of go hardcore after, a couple of these pairs, it would definitely be Nick Robertson and an Austin Matthews. It would definitely be, guys from trendier teams, or even teams like Buffalo and Minnesota, who I think are kind of playing things the right way, building for the future, where I'd have a little bit more question marks surrounding, the Anaheim Ducks, the Detroit Red Wings, teams like that.
And I mean, how do you view some of the, in a keeper league, like how do you view a player like Victor Olofsson, who's 25 years old? Like, he's one of the older rookies. I know we've seen some guys like that. Like, the name that comes to mind obviously is Panarin, when he was a rookie at like 25 years old, and now he's become a superstar 3, 4, 5 years later. Like, do you invest in Victor Olofsson, even though he's like 5 or 6 years older than some of these other rookie or second year players that we've been talking about?
You absolutely invest in Olofsson. You buy all the shares possible that you can afford of this player. He is such a difference maker for them at the wing position. 20 goals in 54 games, 11 power play goals in 54 games. You're not going to see better production than that on the Buffalo Sabres. When you hitch your wagon to Jack Eichel on the wing, there's absolutely no player that I'd rather hitch my wagon to right now that could have an absolute breakout 100 plus point season. And if he does that, Olofsson, he's going to be right up there, 70, 75 points, maybe, Pete. So in a keeper league, forget that he's 25 years old. You need to get exposure to Eichel somehow, some way on the power play. Victor Olofsson's your guy.
And for the listeners, Victor Olofsson has just gotten the three-headed endorsement from Rob Reese, Pete Jensen, and our good pal, who says don't contact him until February, Nick Alberga. Nick Alberga also high on Victor Olofsson. I have to say this: when all three of you are in agreement on a player such as Victor Olofsson, it's usually the right take. So for the listeners, go grab Olofsson if you can, because Pete, Rob, and Alberga on board with this player.
And look at, like we talked about earlier, maybe writing on the wall. I know Sam Reinhart at right wing on Jack Eichel's line has been good in recent years, 50 plus points, 3 straight years, good young player. But I think it says a lot, right? When you put up those numbers, you're in a short-term window here, getting Taylor Hall for 1 year, and you only sign Reinhart the right wing for 1 year, and then you sign Victor Olofsson for 2 years, right? That says that Victor Olofsson is more of a part of their long-term planning than definitely Taylor Hall, because you don't know. It's too much of an unknown. And then Sam Reinhart, maybe either way, even if Hall walks after this year or gets traded after this year, you're still looking at a promising keeper league team with Rasmus Dahlin at number 10 in your rankings, Robbie, for keeper and dynasty, and then Jack Eichel even higher than that. So, great duo to build your dynasty league team if you're starting from scratch this year. And Olofsson at only 25, he could move to right wing to play with Hall and Eichel, be a fantasy beast this year, and then still be a part of it whether or not Taylor Hall stays past this year, and maybe take away the roster spot from Sam Reinhart if it doesn't work out past this year for him.
If there was a way to place a wager on line combinations opening night, I would put money on Taylor Hall, Jack Eichel, and Vic Olsen being the top line. That way you give Eric Staal a guy like Jeff Skinner on the left and a guy like Sam Reinhart on the right, which would be a tremendous second line.
It's a great
very
lineup.
Hard to play against. All those guys, you know, have experience in the league now. So I like what Buffalo's doing. You can kind of see how one signing like that really changes the conversation in terms of fantasy value. I know we mostly focus on the top 50 of these keeper ranks. Again, on NHL.com/fantasy, you can see the whole list there. If you have more questions about guys that we did not touch on today, please hit us up on Twitter. We've already shifted our entire content schedule. We're way ahead, and we're going to just keep cranking out content, get you guys ready for your drafts.
And while you guys have all the other players handled, I am an expert on Tim Stützle. So if you need anything on Stützle, I've watched game footage. I'm on top of him. I know he's probably not going to play in the league next year, but he'll be on my fantasy team. I'll tell you that much. And I am all over Stützle. So anything on Stützle, you come to me. At AirChecked on Twitter, you know where to hit me.
One thing about Stützle, though, that's unfortunate. I think he got injured, right, at like on an on-ice workout. So he's missing 6 to 8 weeks. Thankfully, there are no games going on right now. But, you know, that's not how you want to start your NHL career.
No. He's getting healthy. He's in bed. He's drinking the shake. He's watching game footage. He's going over what he needs to go.
Yeah, Bobby's got the inside scoop here on Stützle. Yeah.
He's eating his brats and his pretzels and he's drinking his Kolsch beer, and he'll be ready to go.
One thing I just want to close out today saying is that goaltending in the Metropolitan Division, you just target any one of these guys. Doesn't matter who it is. They're all going to return value for you. If you need a goalie and you're worried about goalie, if you've gotten burned at that position before, Carter Hart, Sorokin, Shesterkin, Samsonov, Mackenzie Blackwood, please look heavily at the goalies in the Metro Division for your keeper in dynasty leagues.
And Samsonov is another guy that's in that top 20 range in your rankings and stacks right up with the two guys we were talking about earlier, Shesterkin and Sorokin, all of those guys hailing from Russia, of course. And one other thing I wanted to mention, just because we didn't really touch on him too much. I know you mentioned Svechnikov, but some of the young talent that the Carolina Hurricanes have, remember how high on them we were prior to Svechnikov's injury in the playoffs? That team's not going away anytime soon, no matter how strong the Metro is. Sebastian Aho is a top 20, 25 player in all fantasy formats, as is Svechnikov. Dougie Hamilton, still relatively young. Even Martin Nietzsche is a really good sleeper for keeper leagues and standard leagues. I think he was on your deep sleeper list, right? So, Robbie, we'll get to him again in a future show for sure. But just some other guys to touch on to make sure you know we didn't forget about you. Carolina Hurricanes, one of the best young teams out there.
Can't forget about the Carolina Hurricanes. The problem with them is they need a goaltender, and I don't know who they're going to have in between the pipes, but boy, are they loaded up and down with talent. The one goalie that maybe you'd want to steer clear of, I know Davey will disagree, in the Metro is Mackenzie Blackwood, but I'm not going to hit on Mackenzie Blackwood. I'd stay away from him. Put a bow on it, folks.
I'm just jumping in real quick to put a bow on this. And I will say I'm going to defend Mackenzie Blackwood. Actually a pretty good first season, but yeah, it's shaky look for the Devils. But hey, if we get Goalie Master on here in a couple shows, Bob, and he gives Mackenzie Blackwood the stamp of approval,
okay,
I'll go with Davey on that.
Yeah, we got to get Davey on at some point here in the coming weeks. Get him on and we'll integrate Davey, because I know people are hitting me up like, where's Davey? Well, Davey's on vacation sitting on the beach drinking a pina colada, so that's where Davey is. Put a bow on it.
Mackenzie Blackwood had really good numbers last year. I was actually disappointed when they got Corey Crawford, because I thought like he could have been a guy that plays 55-60 games, and now course they're probably going to play Crawford half of the time. So
hey, when
on
Martin
top of being on a shaky team,
when Martin Brodeur goes out and gets Corey Crawford, I think that says a lot about Mackenzie Blackwood. That's all I'll say.
That's a fair point.
He could help him take the next step too. There are a lot of those mentorship between Lundqvist with Samsonov and him, right?
I'll be looking at my watch and my calendar, and Mackenzie Blackwood becomes a viable goaltender in the NHL, I'll tap everyone on the back and let them know. It might not be for a couple years from now, but we'll see.
Sounds good. Yeah, really good stuff on this keeper, rookie, long-term outlook episode of NHL Fantasy on Ice. So for Bob Bender, Rob Reese, Pete Jensen, Stay safe out there, and thanks for sticking with us. We're going to be bringing you content all off season long. NHL Fantasy on Ice. Thanks for listening.